Welcome to another episode of the Oncology on the Go podcast. I'm your host, Russ Conroy. In this episode, Cancer Network's Roman Fabricator spoke with Dr. Wendy Stock of the University of Chicago Medicine Comprehensive Cancer Center about the FDA approval of the allogeneic cell therapy, Orca-T. She discussed how the approval represents a big advance for patients undergoing transplantation for hematologic malignancies, including AML, ALL, and MDS.
What does this approval validate conceptually, and does it change how clinicians should think about the allograft itself as a drug that can be engineered rather than just infused?
Well, I think it does give us some validation of many, many years of work that has been ongoing to try to manipulate the graft in order to improve outcomes for patients undergoing allogeneic transplant, where the big risks are, of course, number one, relapse, and number two, graft versus host disease, which sometimes go hand in hand because of the complications that occur after allotransplant, the need for more immunosuppression, and then the increased risk of relapse. So I do think that this is an important advance, along with other things that have been progressing in the world of allogeneic transplant, other manipulations that don't always have to do with graft engineering. But this shows and validates that graft engineering is possible and is possible in a successful manner to improve outcomes of patients undergoing allotransplant.
All right, thank you for that. I'll roll right into the next question. The standard of care for graft versus host disease prophylaxis has shifted heavily towards post-transplant cyclophosphamide in recent years. How do you position Orca-T against a PTCY backbone? Is this a replacement, a competitor for specific patients, or a different philosophy of graft engineering altogether?
Well, it is a totally different concept in the sense that this is not graft. The post-transplant cyclophosphamide is not graft engineering per se in terms of ex vivo engineering. And yes, I think that it could be a competitor to this to the Orca-T. I think that's not known. And I think that's one of the key questions that needs to be answered prospectively in terms of, you know, whether or not these two approaches are comparable, one is better than the other. And again, the Orca-T was tested in a different population, a very specific population. These were all HLA-matched recipients and donors pairs, and it was done in the myeloablative setting. So the Orca-T study doesn't include mismatched donors, does not include reduced intensity conditioning. So it is a very specific subset that has been shown in a randomized trial to be effective, more effective than not manipulating the graft. But it was not compared to post-transplant cyclophosphamide. That's a huge question, I think, in many ways, including not just potentially toxicity, which we don't know about. We do know differences in toxicity with PTCY versus non-PTCY, but what we don't know is the improvement in graft versus host disease-free survival when these two approaches are compared head-to-head in a similar population of patients. One of the, of course, big issues is an economic one, you know, and it's something that I've thought about. PTCY is not particularly expensive, at least financially. To the patient, it can be costly. It increases the number of days of hospitalization, et cetera, but and has some toxicity associated with it. But it's clearly been shown to be a huge advance improving the number of donors that are available for our patients. And that's something that this Orca-T trial has not yet shown in any way. These are HLA-matched donors, both related and unrelated. It's a different population, and it is an important question to answer prospectively, I think. And that it should be coming. That kind of study should be coming. Again, the other difference was as this was a myeloablative regimen, not a reduced intensity conditioning regimen. And so the PTCY comparisons are not always 100% comparable. And they're comparable. I mean, you can never compare different populations, different studies. So it does need to be done prospectively, I think. I hope that answers that question.
The Precision T trial spanned AML, ALL, high-risk MDS, and mixed phenotype acute leukemia. Do you expect the benefit with ORCA-T to be uniform across those diseases, or are there malignancies where reducing GVHD matters more?
That's a really good question. I don't think we know the answer to that one. It's a good size trial, but when you divide it into all of these different subsets, it's hard to say that one benefited more than the other. We tend to know that the myeloid malignancies benefit a lot from a graft versus leukemia effect, but all populations suffer from graft versus host disease. And sometimes it depends on the preparative regimen, which can be different in different populations sometimes. And different preparative regimens were allowed on this ORCA-T trial. So I think the answer is unknown. And I really can't speak to the strength of it in one population or another. Overall, it was very significant. And so the tables seem to suggest that it was effective for all populations, but the numbers are small and not able to be statistically, differentiated.
All right. Thank you for taking a crack at that. This is a manufactured time-sensitive cell product layered onto an already complex transplant workflow, something you had addressed earlier about hospital time. The like, what does adoption realistically require on an operational level? And would treatment be concentrated at large academic centers initially?
Well, I think in general, allogeneic transplant is done in larger centers. It's such a complex operation with so many regulatory pieces. I think that the actual shipment of the cells does not seem that complicated. The donors have to be collected in advance. The cells are shipped off to the company and they're returned in different populations of cells. So yes, I think it's done. This will be done mostly at larger centers that are large transplant centers, but most centers that do transplant probably would have the ability to do this. They can do the apheresis, they can do the shipment and quality control of the cells. That's all part of the transplant program. And those programs that have the availability and do enough allogeneic transplants should have a FACT approval and should be able to manage this. That being said, I would say that if centers are small and don't do very many allogeneic transplants per year, then this might be something that might be stressing their system a little bit, because the cells have to be collected in advance and shipped and then be prepared to receive them back.
All right. Thank you. I think it's always great to hear that there isn't a huge logistical upheaval, at least for the large academic centers.
I don't think so. I mean, I'm not the person working in the cell processing lab, so I can't say that. But I think, centers are very used to, doing the apheresis for sure, and they're apheresing and sending off a whole product. So that's something that many centers don't do, but I think they should be able in general to do that.
All right. Thank you for that. On to the next one. For the referring community oncologist or hematologist, what should change in how and when they think about sending a patient for transplant now that a lower GVHD option exists? Does this move the conversation earlier?
I think this conversation should always be earlier. I think patients need to be referred to transplant regardless of the ORCA-T. I don't think this necessarily shifts the conversation, but in terms of timing, but I think one of the big struggles that many centers have and that many patients face is that they're not referred quickly enough, or they're not made aware enough of the option of transplant, and they need to be referred early in order to have the best option for going forward with transplant and first remission, which is the optimal time to do a transplant. So I think not necessarily being referred earlier because of the ORCA-T, maybe the fact that they hear that graft versus host disease is less will inspire them. But I think in general, that's a long transplant discussion with the experts in transplantation. And I think patients need to be referred earlier and be made aware of the option of transplant earlier.
I know that aligns with many other contemporaries who I have spoken to often moving that transplant conversation earlier in the treatment paradigm. So looking ahead with, I don't believe it's graft engineering as you expressed, but with products like this, could they be the default for matched donor transplant, or will it be a specialized option for select patients and centers? And what determines which way it goes?
This is, again, a very important question. I think, first of all, this is the basis, this is the beginning of this kind of investigation. So this won't be the first cellular product graft engineering where regulatory T cells are selected. There's the option for selecting specific subsets, for example, or additional subsets. So this is really just the beginning, but it's proof of concept, a very important proof of concept. And I think it will potentially allow, just as post-transplant cyclophosphamide has allowed, higher risk populations to go forward with the knowledge that A, it's possible to undergo transplant safely, and B, that their outcomes are likely going to be better in terms of graft versus host disease, and potentially some of the other outcomes that looked promising in this small, and it's not such a small, but in a randomized trial without huge numbers of patients and still without long-term follow-up. So I think this is a very important beginning. I think it inspires the world of transplant graft engineering to look more carefully at other options in addition that might even improve things more. But I don't think that it will, and I think it will become one of the many very important options that are considered when we have these discussions with patients about undergoing transplant to try to assure them that we have methods now that can truly reduce the risk of severe chronic graft versus host disease, which is a terrible long-term complication of transplant. And the results of this trial were very significant in decreasing that risk, as has other, for example, post-transplant cyclophosphamide done the same. So again, that brings us back to the earlier question that you asked. Is it important to compare the two? Yes. Is it important to consider other alternative, additional sophisticated methods that may allow for even more specific graft engineering? Absolutely. And these are things that the field is now open to.
All right. Thank you for that. I know we touched upon quite a bit here, so I just wanted to open the floor to you for this last question. But what do you hope others take away from this conversation, as well as the approval overall?
Well, I think the most important is the primary endpoint was achieved, which is significantly, very statistically significant, graft versus host disease free survival in patients who got the ORCA T, the T regulatory cells infused. And there were hints to other potentially good outcomes as well from this trial: fewer infections, quicker time to engraftment, and potentially even less acute graft versus host disease. But that all needs to be followed up upon in subsequent studies and potentially with longer follow-up, because perhaps the relapse-free survival will also be, overall survival will be better. That has not yet been shown, but perhaps it will be. And I think that the big takeaway is that over the last 10 years now, we have incredibly exciting and still to be tweaked methods for improving outcomes for our patients undergoing transplant, which is such an important still procedure approach to curing or long-term survival for patients with acute leukemias and high-risk MDS. So I think this is a big advance, and it needs to be studied a little bit more carefully in terms of what we already talked about, comparisons with other big improvements in the world of transplant, including post-transplant cyclophosphamide. The one other thing maybe I should have said is, which I think I did, I alluded to, and of course, I don't know what the cost of this product is, but it's going to be expensive. So it's going to increase the cost. And again, that's one of the questions that can be answered in a prospective trial with post-transplant cyclophosphamide, comparing the two approaches in a similar population. So I think this is not going to decrease the cost of healthcare, but if it may in fact do that, because if there's less chronic graft versus host disease, first of all, and most important to me, is the life of the patient and the quality of life of the patient. And if that's improved, and by all of the metrics that we just discussed, then in the end, the cost is well worth it. Well worth it.
I'm actually very glad that you got that last point in, because I think it's a very important consideration of financial toxicity that a lot will not mention, but is a very important consideration for some patients. But I definitely will agree that more robust, more durable survival outcomes are always preferred.
Right. And I mean, in the end, in terms of financial toxicity, chronic graft versus host disease, not to even mention the patient, which, as I said, to me, that's really what counts. I think to all of us in this, you know, it's the patient that counts. But just in terms of savings, in terms of repeat hospitalizations, cost of care, rehabilitation, et cetera, all of that is such an important part of the quality of life of the patient, but also the cost of care. So I think it's a very exciting advance, and I hope that the next steps in development for transplant are even, you know, another incremental improvement for our patients to decrease toxicities of transplant.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Oncology On The Go podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere podcasts are available, or listen online at cancernetwork.com/resources/podcasts. The Oncology On The Go podcast is the official podcast of cancernetwork.com, the home of the journal Oncology. For more information, visit us at cancernetwork.com and find us on Twitter at cancernetwork without the O, or on Facebook and LinkedIn at cancer-network.